This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 63 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat with Shiva's Vessel regarding poly and what can possibly go wrong. Here's your host, Woody.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Today we have an old friend back on the cast from a long time ago, and this is her part three of her polyamory story, which is entitled, What Could Possibly Go Wrong? Go wrong. Go wrong. Go wrong. Go wrong.
And things do.
Welcome, Shiva's Vessel.
Hello, how are you?
Excellent. You are gracing our chair for the third in the series. When I read the note that you sent me the other day, I'm going, boy, a lot of this stuff looks really familiar.
The partnership problems that you have in poly, and really any form of consensual non-monogamy, are the same problems that you have to a degree in any kind of relationship. They're just magnified in polyamory.
You can take any of the things that are the backbones of polyamory, such as honesty. You know, you can apply that to monogamy, of course. Communication applies to both. But you were saying that it's amplified under certain conditions.
Well, that's exactly correct. We have a lot of issues in poly that are related to just the fact that you have multiple people trying to interact with each other. And some people want to be together at the same time when other people want to be with you. And so then you have issues of balancing. You have issues of trust, issues of resources, many, many things that affect both monogamous relationships or people that are having casual relationships and also people that are in poly relationships.
Let's look at the list that you sent over. Perfect poly partners. Let's see, those exist, right?
If you find one, let me know. I haven't seen any, really, because everybody looks kind of perfect on the front end when we're looking at them with fresh eyes, and they're new, and we have very little knowledge of their history, their relationships, their foibles. We don't know yet how they're going to interact with other people around us. We don't know how much it's going to how it's going to work in our daily lives. So, yes, on the front end, people can look quite perfect. But when I talk about perfect poly partners, I'm really talking more about if we're going to go out and pick a partner, this person has to be perfect for us to have a relationship with them. So they have to satisfy us on all levels. And if they can't satisfy us on all levels, then we can't play with them, or we can't have a relationship with them. And so we hold this person to such a high standard that they can't live up to it. They might be able to live up to it for a little while, but to do it on an ongoing basis over quite a period of time, probably not possible.
Then when you add the three-dimensionality to it of pleasing your partners, keeping them happy in all aspects, every aspect, that's when things just go off the rails completely.
Exactly. And one of the things that I've found is that people use the perfect poly partner as a way to postpone poly. What happens with that is that you set up these standards that are so high that you can be continually in a search. Well, a lot of people really enjoy the search. The search is part of the fun. It's kind of like being pregnant. Being pregnant is one experience. Having a baby is another experience. Well, it's the same with this process of finding a partner. Finding the partner is one process. Having the partnership, and having the relationship among all the partners, that is a very different process.
I know a number of people that love the hunt, the thrill of the hunt. And then it's the not-so-thrill of daily life afterwards.
That is one of the aspects of new relationship energy, I think, that plays into this whole process. You've gone out and you've been looking for a partner. You've done all the exciting, fun things. You've put ads up, or you've chatted in forums, or you've gone to munches or parties or events to be able to meet people. And then you focus down on somebody that looks interesting. You discuss with your partner all the aspects of that to determine sort of what your ground rules are going to be, and then you move forward. And at the moment you move forward, you've changed it. And so even though you may have found a partner that looks good, seems good, is excited, interesting, and wants to participate, once they actually begin that process with you, it may be very different.
Well, and then a lot of the specifications that were set out and agreed upon with other partners can't be met. And it falls apart quickly at that point.
One of the things I've seen happen quite a bit is that when a new partner comes into the picture, it destabilizes all of the relationships that currently exist. And one way to look at it, it's like trying to add another piece to a pie that's already there. In order to make the pie whole, sometimes you have to push the pieces apart in a different way, and they end up, it doesn't look the same. And that can be extremely uncomfortable for somebody with OCD. It can also be uncomfortable to partners in the relationship when they see that the role they've previously occupied is changed in some way. So they may not have the same relationship with their partner, the same amount of time with their partner. They may have to include another partner when they used to be alone with that person, or they may find themselves with more evenings free than they did before, that they have a responsibility then to find ways to fill. So it can be very difficult. And that's the time, if you're going to talk about solutions, that I say this is the time to start doing check-ins. Check in with your partner each step of the way. Because at the moment that pie starts to enlarge and change, the feelings will start and the fear will start. That's the moment when you need to be checking on how your partner is doing, how are you doing, and if they're feeling nervous because of the new relationship energy you may have with somebody, there should be check-ins related to that. Those check-in processes are really good opportunities for communication, and they can be very brief. Just a few minutes, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Anything happening today that's really sort of ruffling your feathers today? Those kind of things.
The converse of that pie example is also true when somebody leaves a poly relationship. Now all those pieces of pie have to remigrate back to a position of stability again. People that had time to themselves and could do other things now get sucked back into a redivision of time, and maybe not so happily sometimes.
Well, sometimes those pieces of pie don't want to sit next to each other anymore. When you're alone a lot, you develop a certain relationship with that time that you have, and then to give that back can feel a little bit like a loss sometimes. So, yes. And again, that would be another process where you need to really be checking in and finding out whether your partner now needs that time. If that's now become an essential piece of the relationship, it has to be incorporated just like another person.
The next thing on our list here is rules, yours, mine, and ours.
I'm scratching my head because rules seem to be a big part of poly relationships. In fact, many, many articles have been written about rule systems in poly, that informal and formal rule systems are one of the things that keeps them hanging together. People generate their own rules. They tend to adopt things that they see other people doing successfully. But the rules process may not be formal. It's not like a contract. A lot of times it's just a set of agreements that you've come to over time that seem to work within that relationship. And what I'm finding is that the less formal the rules are, the more dynamic your relationship can be. If you start to try to formalize things too much, it becomes static, just like contracts and kink relationships. A contract that won't change won't allow anybody to grow. And also, contracts or firm, hard rule systems do not really allow for changes within the configuration of partners. So let's say you've got three partners in and everything's working okay and you've got a set of rules that sort of work within your group, and then somebody else comes in, well, that's probably blown to smithereens because, again, too, just like the pie example that we talked about a little while ago, it's going to change. And if you try to keep the rule system stable while everything is changing, the rules may no longer fit, or they might need to be tweaked so you can have some disharmony if you don't change with it.
Tweaking a whole rule system to add a person and then ripple through all the other partners could be a very complex undertaking.
Yes, and it can last a long time. The other thing about the rules that is pretty significant is not only can it last a long time, but sometimes partners don't all have the same perception of rules. So the rules that you think are in place may not be the same rules that your partner thinks are in place. And it can be just little differences that can be quite significant. So, for instance, if you feel like that your partner should contact you before they go out for the evening with their friends, just to check in and let you know what's going on. So then your evening is then free to do something else with somebody else in your group. It doesn't sound like that's such a big request, but when one partner refuses to check in, it leaves the other partner hanging and they can't really move forward to implement whatever they want to do. Now, that sometimes is very innocent, but sometimes that's a way of controlling the other partner to keep them from doing things that are uncomfortable. One is doing what they want to do, but the other partner is really not doing what they want to do because they're waiting to hear what people are doing.
Well, you are speaking Venetian, and I do speak Martian. So even with a clear set of rules, they're interpreted differently by our languages.
True. Very, very true.
A common set of rules for all players is not really practical. Depending on the dynamics of the relationship, I with partner A, I with partner B, I'm going to have different dynamics between those two people. And so a common set of rules is probably not going to work. And I get different energies from the two different partners. And in doing that, I'm going to have different requirements of what that energy entails, input energy to me, output energy from me, and how I distribute it between the partners. And I can't say that it's a fair distribution because of the types of energy. You can't weigh them in the same system.
Well, I like one of the words you said, fair. I love the word fair because fair is in the eyes of the beholder. And then the beholder in these situations are the partners involved. And so it doesn't really matter how anybody else sees the idea of fair. It's how you and the partner you're negotiating with or you're talking to or you have a relationship with view it. What's fair between you and I? As long as we can agree to it, it's fair. Let's say you have a partner who is a homebody. It's home every day after work, comes in, goes into the kitchen, starts cooking dinner because that's their spirit, their nature is to come in and want to take care of the people in the house. And you wouldn't necessarily have attendance rules for that person coming to be in the house because they're here. That's not really a significant issue. Rules often arise out of fixing problem areas. So another partner may be somebody who likes to go shopping and likes to go meet friends and do things, but they're not good maybe about checking in. So a checking in rule may be really important for that person. Or someone may have the need to have a certain time carved out because they have children and they have to be available for those kids at certain times. And so it's important for everyone in the house to respect that. I think that tailoring the rule system to all the partners and the needs and the situation between them creates the equity that will make the relationship successful.
Fairness and equity, as you say, and there's also another word that goes with that is value. What is the value that is attributed to a function, a pleasure, time together, time apart, free time? All of these things have certain values. Some things are going to be more important to you than they are to someone else. In order to achieve everybody's value and then make it fair, as you said, is important, and find out what the hot buttons are that rise to the top of their individual lists.
It's a triage list in a way.
It is.
And I don't think rules are critical. They tend to develop even if you don't really want to set a rule system in place. If you keep a triage list in mind, you don't then make everything regulated. The most important things are then addressed. And those things may change over the time. They move up and down, depending on what's critical with that situation.
The next thing on our list, fingers crossed, I really do embrace poly.
I like this one because I know a lot of people that say that really have no desire to be in a poly relationship. But they know because their partner really wants it, and they feel they must do it for the benefit of the relationship, either because the relationship's not going to survive if they don't go there, or because they know that it makes their partner very happy. They agree, or they will be silent about their true feelings about having a relationship with somebody else or bringing someone else in. It can be extremely frightening for some people if they're not poly-minded, and I like the term poly-minded. It addresses a comfort level with discomfort. You have to be able to be comfortable with being uncomfortable part of the time and it not be a deal breaker for you to be in this situation because there's a whole lot of discomfort all the time. I mean, I think all the time there's a little bit of...
It's pain and pleasure.
Exactly. It's a balancing act. When you have a partner who says that they're in favor of poly and want to do it, then they're not speaking their true feelings about it. That's going to come out somewhere. It's either going to come out in the form of fear, that's evidenced in the forms of anxiety when you move close to the actual implementation of it, or it can come out in the form of jealousy. It can come out in the form of anger, frustration, and depression, all of those things. Because you're asking somebody to go against their nature and do something that's really not comfortable for them. And many, many people cannot wrap their mind around sharing a partner. It's just not how they envision the world. But they don't want to go against the current, so they're going to just try to suck it up and do it. And I would say you need to really identify that early and really be sure that everyone's on board with this, because if you're not, it's going to lead to some discomfort later for everyone.
Well, then you're going to have things like doubt and self-esteem, self-worth issues that are going to crop up that are all side issues to the primary relationship. But all these doubts have been brought to the surface.
Well, and one of the things that I have seen in some of my academic work is I'm working a lot with jealousy and envy in my work, and they're very closely tied in with feelings of doubt, shame, and guilt. So you have this cycle, this recursive cycle of these feelings that are very self-destructive to the people that experience them, not just the person who's actually judging themselves against their ability to be poly-minded and failing and seeing themselves as a failure in some level, but also you have the partner that's dealing with it experiencing it, and then the other partner is dealing with it feeling confusion or discomfort because they're dealing with someone else's drama. And I don't like the word drama most of the time, because drama, it's a nice cover for actually addressing the issues at hand. What it does create is an energy level in a relationship that is difficult for people.
Gee, you say drama. That takes us into the next one. Whatever you want, dear.
Well, that's the tacit agreement where it's just sort of you're going along, but you're not doing the I'm embracing poly side of it. You're just begrudgingly going on and not really covering it up very well. But what that does is it puts partners away. It pushes everyone back. No one has to say, I am not in favor of this, and I don't want this, and I don't really want you to be here, if they see the evidence of it. So if you're going into these situations to meet other people, and you feel from one person a strong lack of acceptance, it's not going to draw you to the other partner in most cases. It actually can be quite destructive. It can create a situation where you just cut one partner out. And then you end up with a different dynamic. Because all poly dynamics are not including all partners. Some are a V, where there's one partner, and there's a V arm one way, and a V arm the other way, and those two do not interact with each other. A partner that chooses this way of addressing the situation may in fact be creating a dynamic that may be even more threatening for them. If they really don't want their partner to be doing this, but now they're going to be dealing with their partner choosing to do it out of sight of them. It is a difficult situation. That's also where we see a lot of jealousy occurring. And that's a place where we see undermining of the other partners occurring.
And the next thing on our list is play partners or partners.
This one is sort of, I laugh about it. This is part of that pre-planning process.
Uh-huh.
The planning process in the very beginning. When you all are negotiating in the beginning, the idea of opening a relationship up if it hasn't been open, or you've decided to move forward and move into the arena of poly and it hasn't been part of things before, you may be coming from another place. You may be coming from touching base with swing community, and that's really interesting, and I kind of like that idea of being with other partners. Or it could be that you're coming from a kink background where the idea of interacting with others as a part of your dynamic was common, but you didn't do more. There is a real difference between developing a poly relationship and just having pickup play partners or having casual sexual encounters. And that can be an area that is fraught with danger for couples if they don't know between themselves and they are not clear what it is they're looking for. Because it's very different for a man to say, I really want to be with my wife, she's my wife, but I want to be able to have the opportunity to have play partners as well, and I want to be able to do it transparently. that can be a poly relationship, but it's a different kind, a very different kind. It's not poly, really. It's more of consensual and non-monogamy in the, toward a more swing type situation. When I think about poly in the way that, we talk about it most of the time, I think more of relationship intimacy, relationship sexual. So you have two aspects that become a more complete relationship, and it may involve long-term polyfidelity, where it's a small group and it's closed and the partners are only together, or it may be a little bit more open than that, but still committed with the dynamic very clear to everyone. They really are two aspects of the relationship, and they may not exist the same way in every relationship. So some people are poly, and one partner they're sexual with, and one partner they used to be sexual with, and they're not sexual anymore, but they're still poly. They still have a relationship, and it's a poly relationship, or they may be sexual with multiple partners. In my mind, the level of emotional commitment also really adds a dynamic to that, and that is not usually present in casual play partnerships.
So more like a swinger relationship where it's a sexual relationship,
right.
And oftentimes a firewall is put up for emotion.
Right, and that's when you get into some of the rules about not kissing and not, you know, how you, the dynamic, how it's done, to create that firewall and protect the intimate parts of the relationship just for the two parties usually that are involved. When it goes a little beyond that and you have a core relationship and then you have peripheral relationships that are more oriented toward play and they're recurring but they're not emotionally committed, that is a quasi-poly kind of situation, and it sometimes is not easy because nobody really knows how to define it. And so they're really not swingers, but they're really not poly, at least in some people's minds. And I'm saying all of those things are consensually non-monogamous relationships, and they're on a spectrum. Everything's on a spectrum. It's just that we all try to put a box around each of these different types of relationships, and you can't sometimes. So that's why the partners have to be clear about what they have.
That does come back to the word poly. In this case, it's just many. And so mm-hmm. It's many sex partners, it's many relationships, it's many emotional things. And that all falls into that box neatly.
Yes.
Even though it's a little different than what we're talking about. We're often talking about polyamorous relationships mm-hmm. here. And that is where there is a friendship and a love and a caring and a sexual component.
Right. And that's when I think about polyamory, that's more how I envision it. But that's just how I envision it. The definitions are very much determined by the participants. And that's why I like the whole idea of a continuum, because everything falls in that continuum and everyone's relationship is in a different spot.
Of course, polyamory is the opposite of polyfuckery.
Some people think so, and some people don't. I heard a great word, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned it tonight because I thought, oh, this is the greatest word. It's called polyshaggery. And that's just wonderful. It's the equivalent of polyfuckery.
Yeah,
the British version of it. I just love that word. Yes, I love it. That first situation we described, that's kind of a polyshaggery, polyfuckery description.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the participants, they may not really see that as true poly. My jury's out on that because I can see that it's possible to have a committed poly relationship with those kind of rules in place. Key is, what does everybody agree to? If they all agree and it meets everyone's acceptance, I'm cool with it.
Typically, when we think about polyfuckery, that's when certain aspects, such as the truth, is turned off.
Well, that's cheating. That's not poly nothing. That's just poly. That's cheating.
Okay.
And cheating is a different situation altogether. You know, we can address that more because I have a little note on here called Secrets and Lies. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get down to that
sure. Here.
But right now we're at New and Shiny. And we'll catch up with New and Shiny right after this word from our friends at Self.
Make connections the day you arrive at Speed Networking. No need to act your age at our Littles pageant. Get really messy with us at the Splosh Party. Join us at Southeast Leatherfest, where we're erecting a vision.
Well, I'm erect, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Visit SEleatherfest.com. Come to Self June 11th through the 14th in Atlanta and erect your vision.
Welcome back to Polly, What Could Possibly Go Wrong with Shiva's Vessel. We were just about to talk about new and shiny.
Okay. Well, NRE, we hear that term all the time.
New relationship energy.
That's correct. And that is the period that's often called limerence. Limerence is that emotional high period where all your juices are flowing. You're totally enamored with your new find. And they're new and shiny to you. And through your eyes, that person is the best thing since sliced bread. And they just rock your world. It's very difficult if all partners are not really sort of on board in the same way. It's because it's not that common for both partners to experience that feeling directed toward another all at the same time. It could happen, but it may not all be happening at the same time. NRE is a little bit exclusive. The people that are experiencing it tend to see only each other. It can be difficult for the other partners because reality is somewhat obscured by the new shiny, shimmery air around the partnership.
There's kind of an exclusivity between the primary choosing partner and the chosen partner.
Yes, it's a specialness. And the beauty of that is that it doesn't last forever. Probably that's one of the best things about it. It does not last forever. If it did, we'd all probably be dead.
What's the shelf life of NRE?
You know, it's some people say 6 months. I've heard people say, oh, I still feel this after a year or more. Most people say 6 weeks to 6 months, somewhere in that window, depending on the person.
And then somewhere in there, the shoe gets broken in and it fits comfortably and you don't think about it anymore.
Or you think about it less and less in the same way. And we certainly don't want those feelings to go away. And it's great if you can find ways to keep that emotional energy up in the relationship and channel it. But if it's excluding other partners, it's a problem because you can't sustain these other relationships with that amount of energy directed toward just one person for a long period of time. And that's where a lot of jealousy comes in, because it's just hard to watch the partner that you really feel that kinship to directing that to someone else and watch it. I think that's difficult for a lot of people.
And that's also where the time envy then comes in, because you're spending all the time with the new and shiny.
Right. Or you're wishing that you were with the new and shiny when you're with your partner.
Ooh, that sucks.
And that's really not fun because people can feel bad. Mm-hmm. But time envy is a terrible problem to deal with because there is only a limited amount of time in every day. We have obligations for jobs. We have obligations for children, things that we have committed to do. And when you, again, to like that pie we talked about, when you insert a new person into the mix, you're taking away something from someone else because the space that's occupied is the same. And when we're talking about solutions, that requires a lot of discussion, and it also may involve negotiation, but it also may mean that you go back to the drawing board and you reapportion time on a regular basis. You reapportion time as needed from time to time because a partner needs more. They're telling you they need more. They're not telling you they need more, but you know they are. Or because you have a sense that there's a disturbance in the force, in a way.
Right.
So it needs to be addressed. And that's part of the check-in process also.
And you need to be running at higher than 100% energy then to make sure that everybody's needs are being met and addressed. There's one thing that goes with the new and shiny, and that's the shiny one themselves. They're coming into an established relationship in some cases. They need to not be Pollyanna and understand that they are going to be under time restraints, established rules, established mores, potential jealousies, and all those things. And so they're walking into a minefield.
Well, I have advice for the new person. Don't come in greedy and needy. Don't be greedy and don't be needy. You need to rise above that and help everyone else to get through that initial period of time. Now, I think people would somewhat disagree with that statement sometime and say it's not their responsibility to help anybody else feel comfortable.
Ooh, well, that's a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. I think that empathy for the other people in the relationship and sensitivity to the effect that you're creating is critical for success in this situation. And if someone can't bring that into the relationship, they're probably going to have a really hard time, number one, with Polly. Number two, with that dynamic over time, because there's only so long that somebody can go not having their needs met before they just can't do it anymore. And that usually leads to relationship dissolution or conflict. Now, I on my list, I stuck something in here that I, it's really not part of the list per se, but it is important. And
ooh,
that is
a footnote.
It is, yes. Disparity between partners. This is a huge issue. And I think because it doesn't show up as a problem people usually encounter, but it's sensitivity that people need to have, that we all come into these relationships with different strengths and weaknesses and different dynamics and different attributes. For instance, I'm older, and I know for me, the whole concept of younger partners coming in is a little threatening because it makes me get up on my game and I have to do a better job and I need to be prettier and I need to be have higher energy and be more dynamic. See, those are all the shoulds and oughts that I carry around in me.
So you're saying it's motivational?
Well, it also can be frightful for me because it's like that's when the what ifs come. What if he likes her better? What if she pleases him more? Those are the kind of things that will float there when you're not paying attention and dealing with them that can cause disruptions. So, I mean, there's another aspect of this too. What if, aside from all the doubts and fears that one of the partners may be having because of the disparities that make them feel less secure, there may actually be some reality to the concerns in that, say, for instance, a new partner may be coming in and exploiting some aspect of the relationship because they can, because they're coming into a relationship and bringing something in that maybe wasn't there before, and so it gives them some currency to get more or have more than maybe ultimately in the best interest of all the partners. That's often addressed as, well, you're just jealous. You're just feeling jealous about this other person. There may be reality to these observations, and the partner who is feeling that should be validated by at least their concerns being listened to and being addressed. Now, that addressing it may be just to listen with a sympathetic ear, try to show some support, and come up with a way to make them help them feel a little better, but it may be to really seriously consider some of the concerns they may have.
Some of these clues are addressed in sarcasms and off-the-cuff comments and different things. And so one has to be in tune with what's going on to see if there is something that is afoot.
And not just ignore it offhand because it looks like something else. If it looks like jealousy, it could be jealousy. If it looks like jealousy, it could be something else. So it just requires a discussion, I think.
Well, if it looks like jealousy, jealousy needs to be addressed.
Yes.
I like your partner, except ...
One of the myths, I think, of poly is that you have to like every person that your partner likes and like them just as much as they do and accept them 100% and be willing to do. Have you heard all that before?
Yeah, this is going to happen. I'm going, wait a minute, let me get my waders on.
You know, we pick the people we do for lots of different reasons. In the poly relationships I've been in, I don't care about those people for the same reason. They're all different. They have their own dynamics. They have their own skills, their own attractiveness to me, and it is not the same as anyone else. And so to expect someone to like everything about another partner is probably unrealistic. It's possible that you may have to find a way to have your poly relationship and not interact with each other or limit the interaction. If the accept part is a deal breaker for them, I accept she smokes. I just can't be around someone who smokes, except she has a cat. I have a cat allergy. Except she's a night owl. You know, I've got to go to bed by 9 o'clock or I'm dead the next day. So you guys need to go to the living room and I'm going to have to sleep in the back bedroom because I can't do the noise. Some of those are deal breakers. Sometime, though, that question is a way to level a dig at the other partner, to set up some doubt about that partner or to diminish them in some way. And so I think all of those kind of concerns need to be addressed and they need to be, again, validated by being listened to, but they don't need to be deal breakers. They don't need to overwhelm the other qualities of that partnership. They require negotiation of some type. And again, to finding that middle ground so that you can work those kind of things out. But I think there are times when those little digs are used to undermine. And I use that word earlier, undermining is it can be a serious problem in poly relationships when people don't feel comfortable being overt about their concerns or their criticisms or negative feelings. So they find another way to do it. They put it in a more subtle way.
Passive-aggressive.
Passive-aggressive, yeah. And they damage the relationship that way.
Okay, let's move on the list here. We all have to play or nobody can.
Well, I have a question for you. In your long life, have you ever found perfect harmony with multiple people in any kind of situation where everyone is completely in tune with each other?
No.
No. Me neither. I haven't found it either. I just find that it's difficult to find even two people that get along really well. And when you add a third person into the dynamic and expect everyone to be functioning at the same level all the time and interacting at the same level all the time and together all in sync with their energy levels and their interests and everything they're doing, you're going to be so disappointed.
Okay, so we're going to take moodiness off the table.
Oh, okay.
We're going to take any kind of biorhythm cycles off the table. Energies have to be at 100% at all time. Intellect has to be spot on along with all the wit.
And we're all going to like this movie, whether, never mind that I picked it. We're all going to like it because we all like science fiction.
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay.
By the way, you take some of the complexity out of this and go back to a monogamous relationship, it's the same thing.
Yes.
Getting two people that are constantly putting out, you know, great energies so that they're harmonious every single day of their life, loving that same science fiction movie or not. Oh, what do you mean you're into love stories? Oh, well.
So, and we're all eating pizza afterward, and I hope you like anchovies.
I wanted spaghetti tonight, you know. So this whole thing, yes, it is up in the level of complexity by adding a person to it. But it's the exact same problems that we have known ever since we went dating the first time.
You might also notice that in that kind of dynamic, if one person's very strong and the other partners are not so outspoken, that one person can overwhelm and drive the relationship in certain directions.
You mean dominant?
Well, yes, actually. And that may be your dynamic, and that's fine. But it's not everyone's dynamic. And that's another place where some negotiation needs to occur, and equity and harmony, fairness need to come out. And you may need to have a system for, I'm not saying the not tonight, dear, because I don't think that's what we're talking about. I don't really see this as sexual, per se, in whether people are having sex or not having sex. It's more, are they willing and interested in interacting on any level? And it may be that if you require the whole group to go and do every time, then you don't get to go and do very much. If you have some flexibility and everybody's okay with these two going out and doing something because tonight I have a paper due, or I really don't want to go to that movie, but you guys go and have a great time, being comfortable with that and developing a level of comfort with your partner being away and doing things with other people in the group and not worrying about them every single moment they're gone, that something's happening that's completely undermining the relationship where you're never going to see them again and they're gone forever. They're both probably packed their bags and put them in the trunk of the car and they're never coming back. Then you'll be able to do better. But a lot of people have that level of anxiety just floating under the surface in their relationship, and they don't want to do things separately because they are afraid that if they don't do things together all the time, they'll somehow lose that partnership.
One of the key words comes with what you just said is expectations. If we dial our expectations down a notch, then we won't be disappointed nearly as much.
One of the reasons that happens is because we just don't have a lot of good models for poly anything. As soon as we get away from that pair bond situation, we don't have lots of models for that. And so we have to kind of grab at whatever we see that looks like it's working. And sometimes what's working may not actually be working. It's just looking like it's working on the surface. So unless you're really digging deep and trying to find out more about it, it's hard to know.
Now, wait a minute. This model's been out for thousands of years. You know, the harems out there, obviously all those women were perfectly happy.
And so was their owner or husband, who owned everything that they had.
Right. I think owner was the right answer to that. I don't want to know about it. Just don't tell me what you do with her.
I don't even want her email. I don't want her phone number. I don't want her text. If something happens, have somebody else call me, because I don't want to know. If you're at the hospital, have somebody else call. Don't let her have my number. there are some people that is the only way that they can do this. They just have to make it out of sight, out of mind. And that is a coping strategy that some people do when they just cannot manage the in-your-face aspects of having a partner who's also with someone else. Or they may just have a different level of commitment to the relationship, and it's not that important to them. Most of the time, I see it being driven more by anxiety or a desire to close that off and not think about it.
This is not an initial reaction. This is a developed reaction.
A lot of times, yes. It's often when you have two primary partners who have been in a relationship for a long time, and now you're bringing somebody else into the relationship, and one has a very busy life. They may not see that relationship as something that they want to deal with. They just don't want to deal with it. And so the way to do it is just kind of click the blinders on, close that off, don't look at it. That is workable up to a point. But if you're going to have an ongoing situation, I think it's difficult. I'm not saying that you have to interact with your partner. There is a method to communicate. You know how to get in touch with this other person if something were to happen. There should be a level of permission to have that if it was critical to do so.
Dare I say congeniality?
Yes, I think that's a great word to describe it. It's difficult if you're dealing with relationships as if they don't exist, even if you're condoning them, pretending that they don't exist.
That's a little extreme.
And I do see it. It's not so common, I don't think, but I do see it.
Okay, here's one from the list. That isn't how I thought it would be once you're up to your eyeballs.
Okay, so we've gotten into this relationship. We have multiple people that are involved, and everyone's committed up to a certain level emotionally.
Let's see, they all signed the lease, right?
Yeah. They are already used to shopping for three. They have projects going together, and then we reach a point where one just goes, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do it. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I'm feeling too vulnerable. I'm not able to do this. And I think this is a common situation when you have not really done the groundwork on the front end. If you haven't taken the time to understand how much you can take, this can be an overload situation. And I see it often when people move really fast. So sometimes the idea of moving fast seems really attractive because you just want to move forward and do this thing that's so fun and so great and move forward, strike while the iron's hot. But the problem with doing that is that tolerance levels are determined over time, not immediately. And if you get down the road a little ways and it's not working and you're in very far, sometimes it's really difficult to back off. And sometimes one partner or two partners don't want to back off and quit. You end up splitting the relationship in a way that is different than it was when you started. Mm-hmm. I see this happen quite a bit where you have two partners come in, a new partner comes in, one of the original partners tries to stomp their foot and say, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. That partner ends up being the one on the outs. Careful consideration on the front end and very careful, patient building of the situation is more helpful, I think.
The other factor for that is this NRE that we talked about. There is a trial period, if you will, in the front end where people will just suppress it for a while. I can get through this because this guy's just completely nuts, googly-eyed over the new one. And then maybe he's not so googly-eyed anymore after that NRE calms down and it's more of a job to try to keep the relationship together. And that's when things can get very rocky because the one that has been tolerating it is kind of in an I told you so mode.
Yes.
And it can go very wrong then.
And now you're in the process of the day-to-day in the trenches trying to keep the wheels on the wagon for everybody, and it's more work because there are three people in the wagon now and not just the two. It can be difficult if one person starts to voice their assurance. They knew all along things were not going to be that smooth. I think in a lot of cases, what happens with this is that if you can wait it out and get on the other end and then be supportive to your partner once the news off of it, it can settle into a very nice rhythm. But getting to that point is the hard part. And I guess the beauty of it is that we know that NRE only lasts a certain amount of time, and if everybody is just aware of that, you can get there. If you thought it was never going to end, it would be harder.
Which takes us to our next point, I want to get off the merry-go-round.
Sometime, just in the situation we described above, it's not what I thought it was going to be, and you have to do a lot of negotiating to get to a point where everyone's comfortable and resolve the concerns and problems that got you to the point where you want to get off. Sometime you just want to get off. It can happen for lots of reasons. I mean, a lot of people want to quit because they're tired and their work changes and their health changes, and they can't sustain the energy involved with a more complicated relationship. So they want to opt out. Some people just get frustrated because of the relationship dynamics changing in a way that they don't like and they want to opt out. And you really can't bring them back. They don't want to come back into it. The options are that they can leave the relationship, but just if we go back to our pie, we know that if they decide to leave the relationship, the pie is going to still require attention. You're still going to have to reconfigure it and get everybody back on track. Sometime what can happen is a new configuration can occur where one partner is just more removed from the situation but not out. They find a level of interaction that they're comfortable with, and maybe, well, I'm not going to live in the house with everybody, but I'm going to live over here. I'm going to come to the family dinners, and I'm going to go out with y'all when you go, and we'll all have a good time. I'm going to add somebody to my life over here.
And more of a private life.
That, I think, happens a lot of times with people that are a little further on in their lives, and they're getting to the point where the rhythm of their own life is changing, and they require for themselves more attention to themselves, which I think we often have difficulty doing anyway.
And then we have, I'm Polly and you're not. Nana, nana, nana.
Know anybody like that?
Yes, actually.
This is one of the ways I see people address this issue of disparities related to jealousy, because you can't change who you are inside. And some people have more of the tendency to feel fear and anxiety, which is what I equate to the issues that lead to jealousy, than other people. It has to do with security of your attachments. And if you have really secure attachments, you're probably going to do really well in a poly relationship because you're grounded in that way and you don't feel threatened and you don't have levels of anxiety that rise to the same level. If you're not, if you're more anxious in your attachments or you have more difficulty where you tend to push people away, then it's going to be harder if your partner is secure and they're fine with whatever's happening, but you're over here feeling fear and you don't know how to talk about it. And then that partner may choose to support you, or they may say, you just are not a poly person. That's a problem. You just can't accept any relationship I have because you're not poly.
It's a cop-out is what it is.
It is, because it doesn't address the problem. We don't have a label stamped on our head, poly, not poly. We have an interior that is either very secure and stable, or it is anxious, or it is fearful, and we need to be able to address those kind of issues. Those are the things. And one of the ways that I do it is I spend a lot of time talking to my partner about what I'm feeling. And then we do a lot of cognitive behavior therapy, I guess you could say, between the two of us, where we talk about, this is what you're feeling, but now, is there evidence of that? Do you see anything? Am I doing something that enhances that feeling? And we talk it through that way. I know other people who address it differently. Some people use therapists. But you have to find a way to communicate and talk about those issues, because people don't have these labels. And they are not either one thing or another. They are a person. And that person is made up of many things.
Secrets and lies.
Okay.
You've been waiting for this one.
I have been, because I see this a lot in the advice columns, in forums, in feeds, people complaining about their partner cheating on them. They think there's something going on with their partner, but they're really not sure. Another one I see is, well, I must verify to make sure that there's actually a woman in the picture, because so many people say that they're a couple and they're not. Or, I really need to talk to your wife and make sure that she really is okay with you having a date.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that kind of verification is done because people have had surprises in their lives. They may go out with somebody and they have all the confidence in the world that the person is single, available, or part of a poly relationship, and they can interact and be free. And then they find out later that that's not the picture. I just like to address this in terms of the fact that if you're dating and your partner doesn't know about it and agree with it, it's not poly. It's not consensual non-monogamy by definition. It's non-consensual non-monogamy. And that's also known as cheating.
And the thing that goes along with this is mistrust, reading of emails, text messages, private detectives. And in extreme cases, it could get very violent.
And can go even to the degree of, well, this is how I feel, but please don't tell her I said this. That transparency or lack of transparency in that particular situation is in some ways, not in all ways, but in some ways just as detrimental to the relationship as reading people's emails, following them around, spying on them, asking questions of other people about what they're doing. If you feel that you need to do that within a relationship, there's probably something fundamentally wrong and you need to be reassessing the situation.
There's something wrong with you, but my Polly's just fine.
This kind of goes with, I'm Polly and you're not. One of the ways that people deflect attention away from problems they may be having in the relationship is to point their finger at their partner. And I think it's a defense strategy that it's not beneficial, but it's another way of labeling and directing attention away from the problem. In most of the situations we've been talking about tonight, if people will communicate with each other, have a conversation about not who they are and what they are, but what's happening in the situation, they would find much more in the way of constructive outcomes. Anytime we stick labels on, I'm good and you're bad, or my Polly's great and yours is defective, or my partner is a better choice than yours, or you always do this, or they always do that, you're getting farther and farther afield from the issue.
Well, it's whitewashing to a large degree. Mm-hmm. If you are that insecure that you have to go into the blame game and not into the constructive communication mode, then it's very destructive.
So I just continually refer to communication as the most important tool in your toolbox. Talking to each other, hashing out the tough times, really, really trying to identify the underlying issues, digging till you get there, and then being willing and able to say, this is not fixable. That's one thing that's hard. This one I can't fix. Can we find another way? Or is this something that may be so detrimental that we can't repair it? I think sometime in poly relationships, we keep putting Band-Aids all over it for so long that pretty soon it's just, it looks like a mummy.
Well, turn off the blame game and get down to communicating. Figure it out. So the question is, how many is too many?
Well, you know, when we're making that mummy, we find all the problems we have in our current relationships. One solution that people have is to continue to add people. Just add more people. If what you got's not working, add more. That'll make it better.
Yeah, that's like swinging to solve a marriage problem.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The other piece of the issue there is that it often creates a situation where you're addicted to NRE. You become so addicted to that feeling of new energy. And you become so enthralled with the hunt that you get caught up in it, and the hunt and the new energy is exactly what you want, not really the relationship. And so that does break a lot of relationships because you can't continue to add new people with the same piece of pie. You can't. The slivers get smaller and smaller, and eventually someone's going to be unhappy. Now, what happens many times is people drop out. So then you have a revolving door where you have people dropping out, new people coming in, and it can really become more like swinging rather than a committed poly relationship because the players are constantly changing. I'm not sure what the answer is to that. I don't know if there is a number, but there can be too many.
Anybody that's watched Cody Brown and the Sister Wives knows that that man is up to his eyeballs in four.
And it probably is different for everybody. Some people are probably up to their eyeballs in two.
And that's probably true. I watch that TV show and I just go for it, man. You're having too much fun. They keep talking about adding a fifth, too.
I think the problem I see in situations like that is that often not everybody's being heard. And if you're in a poly situation and not everybody's being heard, one partner may, again, dominate and be driving this new addition process and continually bring people into this relationship, and everybody else is not having a say in it. So there are some options. One can be that the other partners fill their time with other people and you extend your poly network out further. That's one way. One is people can pull out and leave the relationship, or you find hobbies and interests to fill your time when you don't have a partner there with you. I think there's a point at which you have to say, who is really getting anything out of this relationship if you can't have some meaningful interaction on a regular basis?
So if that cherry pie is divided too many times, it's not going to be a very fulfilling piece when you eat it.
Oh, now it's cherry, is it?
I just made it a cherry pie. So tell me about the myth of the unicorn.
Well, we hear about the unicorn in swing, and we hear about it in poly kink, and we hear about it in polyamory online in Lovingmore and other situations like that. This is, again, another form of the perfect poly partner. A woman, because all women are bi, right?
Right. Everyone I've
every
ever
woman's
met.
Bi.
Yeah.
And every man wants two women. So, yeah. You know, that becomes the nature of the unicorn. And then there are so many women out there looking for a couple that they can spend their time with so that they will have their bi woman partner and their man to share. So I think that that is attractive to people because the idea of having two women is such a big male fantasy. And the idea of two women together is a big fantasy for many men, not all men. And there are truly bi women out there that are looking for partnerships like that. But I think we put a lot of emphasis on it, and a lot of people are looking for this unicorn, this mythical unicorn. I don't know too many of them. I've actually met a couple, but not too many.
And most of the times I hear about it, a unicorn is referenced as a one or two time thing and it's over. So from a pure poly point of view, it is bringing somebody in and taking somebody out. It's not an ongoing relationship typically.
I do see it a lot in swing. Yeah. A lot of couples are looking for that because actually that's an entry point into swing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an area where they can be comfortable.
A single woman.
It's less threatening than a second man in the interaction.
As we start to wrap up the show, let's talk about opening and closing a relationship. What's involved there?
One of the hardest discussions that people have, I think, in any relationship is when they make a decision. Usually one person has thought about it a lot and finally developed a level of confidence or bravery or maybe imbibed enough alcohol that their feelings come out in a discussion.
Honey, I want to open the relationship.
Or she's really cute, don't you think?
Yeah.
I've always kind of thought it would be fun to do this, and the discussions ensue. And I remember that discussion well, and it was a very frightening experience. It was very frightening, and it was actually planned out over a period of time.
Carefully choreographed.
Yes, and it was exciting on some levels to have that conversation, but scary as hell. But it was, in fact, a series of discussions over time where we started to gauge the comfort level, and we started by trying little things and pulling back and then having conversations and reading things. But it was all like putting your toe in the water and taking it out, putting your toe in the water and taking it out, because it was really scary. However, over time, my toe stayed in the water longer and so did his. And then as time progressed, and it was quite a long time, it moved forward until the point where there could be something that was polyamory and not just a swing or casual encounter, that kind of thing. So I would say that that's probably a pretty effective way to open relationships up. Closing them is another matter. Closing them can be really frightening, but in a different way. Because if one partner is extremely happy with having the open relationship and they're really, really enjoying what they're doing, or at least for the most part they are, and the other partner just can't do it anymore, then those discussions have to ensue as well. And they may be, in fact, the same kind of thing where you stick your toe in the water, close it down for a little while, then come back and try again, or take a little hiatus, taking a break. That's what everybody calls it. But if you have multiple people in the relationship and one person wants to be out, it's just like what we talked about earlier. It may be that one person goes out. Or all three may not want to close down the relationship. Two may want to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
It is, again, a series of discussions to talk about how does this look now and how might it look down the road and what do we need to do? Am I going to be able to continue to be involved in some way but not in the way we are now, or do I need to just remove myself completely? I don't know. It's individual to each situation, but it is sometimes these things have a life cycle.
In a lot of cases, I've seen hybrid polyfidelity to where several of the members are closed and happy. One of the members still has open trolling going on. And as long as everybody understands what's going on, then it gets the stamp of approval for poly relationship.
I agree with that.
Not everybody can meet everybody's requirements. And a lot of times, if you have a geographical requirement that's added to it, to where the person that's further away doesn't get to see the main family that often, then they need something of their own locally.
One of the things that I always think about when I'm thinking about this is that we tend to treat life as very static when we're talking about these things, but it's a very dynamic process. And over time, the rhythms of life for every person are like biorhythms, up and down, and they cross at different points. And you may have somebody that has something going on in their life that prevents them from continuing even if they want to. For instance, health issues or financial issues or family commitments that pull them away, job commitments that move them to another town. It's extremely important to be flexible and to really consider all the needs of all the people participating in these situations. And if someone has to move away and they can't be and they don't want to move away, find ways to support them so that they can continue at least to be connected in some way if that's their desire.
Once the love is developed for a person and a family, a collective, then it's not going to end just because one has to move away. There's going to be a long-distance relationship. There's going to be any number of things that can go on. It's not going to continue the way it was, but it is certainly not going to have a reason to just terminate.
I think that's the beauty of the depth of some of these relationships is that they don't just end. They have a life of their own that continues. As we mature and grow, as we change over time, the relationship can follow along with that and change and grow over time.
And on that wonderful closing note, I want to thank Shiva Zessel for visiting for this lovely installment of What Could Possibly Go Wrong in Polyamory Relationship.
Well, thank you very much. It was so nice to be here.
We look forward to seeing part 4.
Oh, now what will I talk about?
You'll think of something.
You have been listening to episode 63 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we have the return of Riven Caldara and Joshua Tenpenny.